Communicating is an art that needs to be learned. Many of us think we easily communicate, but many of us do not really communicate. We merely talk. And I would suspect that there are a lot of us here who have some things to learn along this line. For some years, I rather prided myself because I thought I was confident and skilled in relating to people. And it came to me as quite a shock when I realized that I actually missed cues many times and therefore didn't meet people's needs. And later I realized that although talking with people was generally easy for me, yet my ability to reveal my true inner self was rather low. Now, all of us have some God-given areas of strength in the line of communicating, and some weaknesses. And to be realistic, we should admit both. And God has given me various strong points in this area. Basically, I'm a good listener, although there are times when I need to improve here. And my speech is generally kind, and this is a real victory from the Lord. And to a degree, my ability to share my real self has increased. A willingness to open up on my failures and my needs. But this can still stand from improving. But there are still some big areas of weakness. And probably as I studied through to present this morning, I learned far more than any of you will, and I probably need much more changing than a lot of you do. And I've been re-impressed with my need to have more very deep, open, self-revealing communicating with Warren, partly because of various areas of my life that need a lot of growth. And I feel this could help. And I'm still concerned that I still miss cues. I need a greater awareness of the subtle ways that people let their needs be known. And so I would tell it that you pray for me along these lines. The night before Warren left for Penang recently, we had a little misunderstanding. Just before dinner. And I reacted rather immaturely to a slightly hostile reaction of his. And then dinner came in, and it was, I almost forgot about it. But later he came into the kitchen to discuss it further and to ask me to forgive him. You know, I resisted forgiving him in my heart. And also I was very slow to see how I also had been wrong. Maybe I was the most wrong. And so I didn't do some things right. But we did some things right. We didn't attack and label one another verbally. And we didn't, when the emotions rose a bit, we lowered our voices instead of raising them. And Warren didn't let it go after dinner without bringing it up again and pressing for a healthy discussion that would resolve it on a deeper level instead of just letting it go on underneath. And so it was resolved rather quickly. The whole period, including the dinner hour, was about 2 hours. But you know, if I had responded with greater insight, I think it would have taken just a few minutes. Or maybe it wouldn't have been risen at all. So, we accept ourselves and our partners where we find ourselves in this matter of communicating. And then we press on to increase and improve our abilities. It's really important for our marriages that we press on and learn to communicate better. Because it's been said that the inability of husbands and wives to talk to one another is the number one problem in marriages. Now, communicating failures are the subject of endless complaints. One wife said, "My husband is like a mysterious island, and I sail round and round, and I never can find a place to land." And another woman said, "My husband never replies, he only grunts." And a man said, "My wife is a sphinx." There are other partners who do excessive amount of talking, but it's always superficial. The news, the TV programs, the neighbors, they never get down to real feelings. Or if they do, they only exchange negative feelings like constant nagging and complaining or occasional periodic explosions. And other couples believe they're unified because they do a lot of things together. They go to sports events, they go to the theater, they go to church, maybe they go fishing. They do a lot of things together, but they don't. What they're doing is running side by side without ever really finding each other. And they may find this out too late. Marriage is meant to be a relation of deep inner oneness. And it's been defined, one definition that I really like is that it's the gradual opening of two hearts to welcome each other at the core of their being. And to do that, we have to truly communicate. On a deep level where we share our hidden thoughts and feelings, where we share our wishes and our values and goals and our worries and frustrations, we need this kind of communication. Now, communicating has great potential for both good and evil. Even communicating that exchanges feelings can be either constructive or destructive. The book of Proverbs gives a lot of up-to-date ancient wisdom on the subject of communicating. And I went through it and I was excited to find how many pertinent things I found. Regarding the potential of communicating, it says that death and life are in the power of the tongue. And it can be a tree of life or it can crush the spirit. And it can be like, it can be rash like the thrust of a sword, or it can bring healing. And so communication has great potential for evil as well as good. There are many destructive communication patterns that really hinder a marriage. We've hinted at a few of them already. They're things like a steady stream of complaints or fault finding, or attacking the character of the other person, pinning labels on them, negative labels. You're stupid. And many other similar things. Or a frankness that has no concern for the feelings of the other person. Or barbed humor, a kind of negative joking that lets our complaints be known in a hurtful way. And such talking has many serious results. The book of Proverbs again tells us that he who opens wide his lips comes to ruin. We can bring ruin to our own personalities, to our loved ones, to our marriages, by our tongue. Because the unwise speech fosters alienation and apartness, and sometimes it can drive a husband completely away from a wife. It can drive him into any number of problems. From unfaithfulness to alcoholism to that obstinate silence that refuses to speak many times. Maybe one of the greatest dangers of negative speech is that our loved ones will really believe the negative things we tell them about themselves. They see themselves long enough in the distorted mirror of our negative reactions, and they begin to believe that that's what they really like, and they gain a low negative self-image, and then that kind of action comes out of their lives. So we produce the things that we keep telling them they are. But communication also has tremendous potential for good, so the solution is not just closing our mouths and never saying anything. Again, let's go back to that ancient book of Proverbs, back in the center of your Bible. And it says, how delightful is a timely word. He who speaks right is loved. And pleasant words are a honeycomb. They're sweet and healing. It can heal personalities and relationships. Good communicating is like a mirror. You notice in our illustration. It's like a window that lets in light and fresh air, or like a mirror that lets us see ourselves more clearly. And through communication, we can do many things in our marriage. We can exchange information and meaning. And this, that broadens our thoughts, our viewpoints. It corrects them where it's needed. And it balances our ideas. And it keeps us in touch with the activities and interests of our loved ones. And communicating also helps both partners to make enlightened choices. And therefore, it minimizes the chance of mistakes being made. It also helps to resolve problems as they arise. Instead of letting them irritates for years, like sand in a shoe that's never taken out. One man, for years, was terribly irritated every night when he came home from work, and his wife greeted him with a barrage of minute details. But he didn't want to hurt her feelings. For 20 years, he went with that sand in his shoe. And finally, he said, "Honey, you know, when I come home, I'm tired, and I need 30 minutes to collect myself, and I don't want to have to listen to you. I could listen with real interest if you just give me 30 minutes. And she said, "Well, fine, why didn't you tell me earlier?" Honest communicating even helps to relieve problems. And it prevents disunity and serious conflict. It can be like the oil that keeps our marriage running smoothly, or like the escape valve that lets the steam come off a little bit instead of building up and finally exploding. And when communicating breaks down, love is blocked. And when love is blocked, then its energies begin to turn into resentment and bitterness. Communicating can turn those energies back into love and be one of the helps to do so. Communicating helps us to come to agreement on a mutual way of life, policies and practices of the family. They have to be discussed thoroughly to be agreed upon. And it can add richness and vitality to a marriage. You know, many couples are like prospectors that walk back and forth aimlessly over rich deposits of ore without knowing it's there. And God has placed a special, unique richness in every human personality. And communicating is one of the ways that it's discovered and refined. If richness can easily be missed. What we need to do in our communicating is to discover the rich ore in one another and refine it and begin to shape it into beautiful form. And this is what loving communicating can do. And we miss the wealth in our relationships when we expect the ore to already be refined when we marry. Be critical of the other person because of the impurities still left in the process. Communicating also contributes much to our growth as persons. I came across a statement that says, "Persons feed on persons." And this is why our relationship with God is so essential. Because God is the bread of life. As we relate to Him, we receive a new kind of life, vibrant and exciting, abundant. So He is the basic food our spirits were designed to feed upon. But besides that, He puts great emphasis upon relationship with other persons, because that is also a food for our spirit, for our personality. And every person needs human communication, even if he has drawn up the drawbridge and retreated in silence and shows no sign of knowing his needs. You know, picture how an orchestra conductor gets up before his orchestra and draws out the power of the musicians. Well, that's what we can do for one another. We can draw one another out. And this helps us to grow as persons. Communicating can also be a means of mutual therapy. You know, they say that all of us, to one degree or another, are neurotic. It seems that to be well-adjusted, we have to make ourselves known deeply to at least one other person. And otherwise, we don't really know ourselves. We need a human mirror in which to see what we're really like, as well as seeing ourselves in the mirror of God's love. Paul Tournier has made an interesting statement about this. He says that we can be psychotherapists for one another as partners. In essence, he says, psychotherapy is long, intense listening with love and respect and a real desire to understand. As we get past the bare outline of our loved one's background and share with one another the little incidents, maybe even, but the ones that are triggered with lots of emotion, they can be relief. And Tournier goes on to say that he lost his father when he was 3 months old, and he had never realized how deeply that had marked his life with frustration. And then one day he was talking with his wife, a long talk, where they especially felt God's presence. And then after a long time of talking, he burst out sobbing. And he released an inner emotion that had been repressed for years. And unknowingly, his wife had served as a psychotherapist for him. And we can really help one another. And we all need this help. Now, communicating has great potential for good, but it isn't easy. Oh, it's easy to just talk for some of us. But it's not easy to really communicate because there are many problems and barriers and hindrances that often have to be overcome. And the root of these problems is found in our own hearts. In the book of Isaiah, in chapter 53, we read that we have turned everyone to his own way. And in us is an inborn bent to want to turn our own way. Not to turn God's way, not to turn anyone else's way, not to turn our husband's way. We want to turn our own way. And when the Bible speaks about sin, this is basically what it's talking about. And we need deliverance and forgiveness. And then there's our basic identity problem. One of our deepest concerns psychologically is our sense of identity. Who am I? What am I like? Am I an acceptable kind of person? And from infancy, we've been building up a self-image to our relationships with other people. And we've learned to see ourselves in various ways. Maybe some of us see ourselves as loved and worthwhile, and others as condemned and rejected. And some of us may see ourselves as the center of everything. We should have our way. We see ourselves overly important. And others feel they have no significance. And most of us have a combination, a distorted self-image, a false one, that has some areas that are too low and some that are too high. And we need it to be balanced. Because any false image is not in accord with reality. So there are always facts to shake it, that try to come in. And we're always on guard against those facts. And we ward off any evidence that would balance off our too high opinions of ourselves. Or we try to find evidence that will support our unrealistically high self-image, or that will prove that our low self-image is not true. And we're afraid many times of really close, intimate communications because it may make us face the kind of evidence we don't want, the kind of evidence that will shake up our fixings about ourselves. So we conceal and camouflage. We do this either consciously or unconsciously. Some of the negative things about ourselves are so painful we push them down and we don't even know they're there anymore. And we long for a human mirror that will let us feel ourselves as acceptable and admired. And so we put on a mask that we think the other person will approve. We hide the unacceptable parts of ourselves that make us feel uncomfortable and that we're afraid they won't love. So even with our partners, we put on this mask and hide some of the unlovable things that we're afraid will lose love. But you know, this protection that we gain by our mask is really bought at a very steep price, because we forfeit true love by doing so, because no one can love a mask. You can only love persons, genuine, living persons. And the people can admire a mask, but they can't really love it. And so we never feel really loved. Our husband never can love us for our true selves if we hide behind a mask. And people become a threat to us because we're afraid that they will get past the mask and tear it away. And therefore, because we have this unstable, false sense of identity to one degree or another, people are a threat to us, and many times we build up walls around ourselves. Besides, these masks might be called walls. Defensive walls. And but the walls block out love as well as disapproval. And they cut out true close relationships. And there are many kinds of automatic defense reactions that rise up within us when our identity is threatened. I'm sure that you'll identify with maybe all of these that I'm going to list, but at least with many of them. Some of us major on one, some on another. But I suggest that as we go through that you make a note or mark the ones that especially come up in your marriage, either in your life or in the life of your partner. But facing things can sometimes be one step in overcoming them. One of our defenses is fear and anxiety. This is a feeling of being threatened, so we're sort of on guard inside of us. And it may cause us to have sort of a self-protective distrust toward our loved one. And so we have to constantly guard against him and filter our words so we won't give him the wrong or the right impression. And this kind of anxiety causes the emotional pressure to build up and many times comes out in hostility. And besides the general anxiety, there are many specific fears that rise as defenses in our hearts to supposedly protect us. There's the fear of seeing or revealing our total self, having our mask torn away and being found out by our partner. There's the fear of losing admiration or being judged and disapproved. This makes us unwilling to open our mouths and admit our faults and our needs as human beings. And it makes us justify ourselves and make excuses for everything instead of being honest. There's a fear of hostility or any attack on identity. I have an undue aversion to hostility, like I mentioned in my first illustration. I will, if I'm not really trusting the Lord in a situation, then I react immaturely to any even little bit of hostility toward myself. And actually, this business of really opening up and letting our true selves be seen is rather scary, because if our partners know us really well, then they'll know where to plant their bombs in those instances where their love grows thin or their hostility comes out. So it's a defense. We fear hostility and we defend ourselves. There's a fear of humiliation, which is sometimes done by belittling or contempt or indifference or ignoring important things that we share and the partner doesn't see the importance of them. Like one dear friend of mine says, if there's anything I hate, it's ignorance. I hate to be ignored. And we fear being ignored. We fear betrayal. And so do our husbands, maybe more than we do. Maybe our partner, if we open up on deep, confidential things, will betray our secret to someone else. We fear appearing weak and fearful, and we forget that all mankind, whether they show it or not, has deep underlying fears and areas of weakness. And we fear appearing childish and immature. Actually, in many areas, all of us have either stepped down into immature periods or have immature areas that we haven't grown out of. And I think we should work at admitting them, especially to our partners. So all of these fears basically go back to our fear of losing identity, our fear of not feeling confident about ourselves. And if we just join the human race and admit our fears, this can be a great step toward closer community. And another defense that's a very basic defense is hostility. In this case, the other person has threatened our sense of identity, or we're afraid they're going to attack us. And so we have a hostile wall. We have these feelings of hostility because we want to teach them not to do this to us again. And we can express them in a verbal attack, or we can express them just by giving them the cold shoulder. There are dozens of ways you can express hostility. We can bottle it up inside and let it turn into a deep resentment. And this blocks love, and it starves us out for true communicating and true love. But it helps to realize when we or our husband show hostility that it's evidence of an unmet identity need. Then there's self-reproach or self-blame. Here the hostility is turned in on ourselves. we have done something or failed to do something, and it's our own fault that we feel so terrible about ourselves. And if we can get ourselves long enough, maybe we'll teach ourselves not to do it again. And we forget that Christ bore the guilt of all of our sins, that he died upon the cross, and that total forgiveness is available if we just come to him and admit our sins. And so he never condemns us, and our self-condemnation does us no good, but it is a defense that many of us employ. Now, there are many miscellaneous defensive reactions. We rationalize, or we talk compulsively in order to escape what others might want to tell us. We may change the subject. We may hide our deepest thoughts under jovial, flippant words all the time. And there are many ways that we defend ourselves. One is by withdrawing, and this is maybe one of the worst ways. We withdraw into silence, we withdraw from the situation, we go off in a huff. This is a defense. And whatever our reasons for blocking off a part of ourselves are, these defenses we lose, because this blocking is never selective. It may block off and protect us from being hurt from the outside in some ways, but it also blocks off the flow out of creative love toward other people and the flow in of love. Now, besides our identity defenses, there are other barriers and hindrances in communicating that we should be aware of, because they can be overcome. One is language. This is both an aid and a barrier, because sometimes words mean a different thing to different people. They have different emotional content. The word father may make someone feel tremendously good and another person just feel horrible. And we have to learn to watch for the feelings behind the words and to see if our partner is getting our meaning. And then there are preconceived images of our partner. We talk about our own false image, but we also build up an image of our partner, sort of an ideal image of what will meet our needs, and we don't want it shattered. We don't want to be disappointed. So just don't tell me about yourself. I want to still believe you the way I thought you was. You were. And or else we develop a negative image of him and build up all these complaints so that nothing good ever gets through. A false image, and we interpret everything that he says in the light of our negative preconceived idea of him, and his words, his meaning never gets through. We draw conclusions in advance about what he's going to say. And we got to remember that at best our image of another person is limited, because our knowledge, we don't even know ourselves completely. And another person is a growing, changing person. And even if our image was relatively correct yesterday, it may be very wrong today if we don't keep it up to date by honest communication. Another hindrance is contrary purposes. Each partner being interested just in what they want, or what they want to get across, instead of having a working purpose to really understand one another. And then there are faulty techniques. We may feel love and really mean well, or we may not, but we use faulty techniques. These methods of communicating whittle away at the partner's self-concept all the time. And I'll just mention a few of them. Nagging, or constant flow of suggestions, or making comparisons, such as pointing out how well some friend of his is doing economically, or how a thoughtful our father used to be. Comparisons are always not bad. Inward reservations or expressed reservation on every idea he brings up. Immediate negative. Usually they're just rooted in our own comfort, not in the best decision. One of the big faulty techniques is sending out coded messages. We say one thing and we expect our partner to read our minds and get the real meaning. For instance, a husband comes home and the wife says, "Oh, I've had a terrible day and I've got a splitting headache." And she means, "I wish you'd put your arms around me and tell me you understand and take us all out to a drive-in for dinner." And the husband says, "You've had a bad day. Wait till you hear about mine." And he relates the frustrating day he's been through. And his meaning is, you can stay home and you can watch TV if you want to. You can talk to your friends. And when I get home, I need a few minutes of quiet. I need some peace. Not all your complaining. And in millions of homes, these coded messages are sent back and forth year after year, and they never get in touch. The partners never get in touch with each other on them. Now, there are problems and barriers and hindrances, but if we have the right attitude toward them, they can be helpful. We have to accept them as part of our curriculum in communicating. What is the subject matter for good communicating? These very things I've been talking about. Discussing them honestly, understanding why the other person responds defensively. Communicating when a problem comes up, not withdrawing. And conflict and problems and hindrances are part of the sometimes painful pilgrimage to truly relating to one another. But the rewards are greater than the cost. And communicating, someone has written, does not occur when the barriers are wiped away, but when they are used as subject matter. Each problem or barrier provides opportunity for deeper understanding and growth. And sometimes painful encounter is the path to truly pleasurable encounter. Now, let's go on to the process of communicating. The ideal situation is if both partners want to work at communicating. They're really wanting to know one another and to improve their marriage. But many times that is not the case. Many times, for instance, we as wives, through our faulty techniques and our own defensiveness or our own destructive communicating or other lack of love, have caused such barriers to rise up that our husband, as far as he shows outside, could care less. But let's remember that every man longs to communicate to a woman. And if we learn to face our own needs and to change our own self through God's power, letting Him change us, then we can be the woman to whom our husband will communicate. And communicating doesn't just happen. There are some important attitudes and qualities that we have to develop if we want to be chosen as his confidant. And no one will choose a person that they don't feel that they can trust. And there are attitudes that draw out communicating, and there's others that hold them off. So let's go into a few of the attitudes that meet our partner's identity needs instead of always undercutting his identity. And the first is, accept your partner as he is. We talked last time about even praising God for the way he is right now, because we have important things to learn from this situation if we don't withdraw. And accepting another person does not mean that we approve everything he does. We can accept the person even when we disapprove some of the deeds. But we accept one another not because we're perfect, but because we've been created by God and uniquely designed by him. And although we may be flawed, there's something very wonderful in any human being because he's a creature created by God. And we can accept ourselves in that same way, flawed yet wonderful. Then we have to show respect for our husband. This kind of an attitude will build up his identity, lower his defenses. Regard him as one who deserves the same respect that you would like to have. And this goes many areas. Respect his integrity, his motives. Believe he means well, even if it doesn't look like it. And respect his will, his right to choose and make his own decisions. Don't try to run his life, or you undercut his identity. Respect his feelings and reactions. Don't condemn him. Don't disregard his feelings and trample on them. Respect his feelings, like you would like him to respect yours. And respect his intelligence. Don't convey the impression that he's really made all you you're really stupid to have made that decision if you'd only listened to me. Respect his intelligence and his distinctness. Don't try to make him over. Yes, both of us in any marriage have some improving to do, but don't try to make over your husband. Respect him for the unique person that he is and begin to see the good qualities. And then respect his leadership. This does much to lift a man's manly sense of identity, because he was created to basically be the leader of the family. And if we keep on trying to step into his shoes, then we're always a threat to his identity. And then third, express admiration and appreciation. Oh, I noticed this morning how manly you looked when you went to work in your new sport coat. Made my heart titter a little bit. Oh, I was just thinking today how fortunate I am because of, and then mentioned something specific. Or I was really helped, honey, by what you said this morning. I thought about it often today. Admiration, appreciation can be expressed in so many ways. And then also, we have, besides attitudes that meet his identity needs, we need the desire to know him better, the desire to understand him. This can make us the woman that he wants to unload to, the woman he wants to talk to. As long as we're preoccupied with being understood, we're going to be miserable. But if we start to give understanding and to seek to understand, it's not usually too long, or eventually a man draws out also and seeks to understand. And part of the excitement of love is to plumb the undeath mystery, revealed mysteries in the other person. And let's realize that they're there. That doesn't mean we should be nosy and intrusive and insist on knowing every thought and try to press for too great closeness too quick. But if we have an attitude that really longs to know him, then his defenses will start to melt. And as we begin to understand him, better communication will begin to result. Besides developing the attitudes that increase our husband's sense of identity and confidence about himself, and besides this deep desire to know him better, there are certain qualities of character that really increase communicating. And all of us have some qualities that need developing. Mine may be different than yours. Some of us may maybe need to learn to speak out more, and some of us may need to learn to keep quiet. And each learning process is difficult. And many of them are impossible apart from supernatural resources. But let's take a look at a few of these qualities. And the first is humility and teachableness. These two go hand in hand. Do you find that often you always think the other person is wrong, and the other person should change his ways? This is a proud spirit. It doesn't admit that much of the basic fault is also on my part. Do you always have a point to prove or a position to defend? Are you always interested in informing your partner and not really wanting to learn? This is pride. And it cuts communicating. And we need to really want to learn, want to change. And that's what a humble person does. A humble person is teachable. And the Bible also has strong words at this point. Back to Proverbs again. Proverbs 18:2 says, "A fool does not delight in understanding, but only in revealing his own mind." And Proverbs 12:15 says, "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but the man who listens to counsel is wise." And we can cultivate the attitude of humility and teachableness. And it can be, a way to begin is by frequently telling ourselves, "I could be wrong." And by frequently saying to ourselves, "I have lots to learn and I have lots of growing to do." And we can develop this attitude. It helps us to be open to the other person's meaning. And then we need the courage to be honest and open and self-revealing. Ephesians 4:15 tells us that we should speak the truth in love. We are to speak the truth. We're not to be deceitful and cover over the truth with a false and smooth speech that we don't really mean inside. We're to open our mouth in the right way. And the courage to do so comes from God. The courage to reveal ourselves and our needs. The courage to say what needs to be said. 2 Timothy 1:7 says that God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. We need courage in quite a few ways. Courage to reveal our opinions when they're divergent. Some of us don't need this, some of us do. We need courage to be seen as we are, as a blend of strengths and weaknesses, as just human beings with needs and worries and fears and burdens. And when we get the courage to open ourselves up like that, then our husband realizes we need his help and encouragement and his defenses lower. And again, our husband cannot love a mask. And if we want to have the feeling that we're really being loved for the depth of who we are, with our imperfections and needs and strong points, we need to let God give us the courage to reveal ourselves. And we need the courage to graciously confront our husbands on significant points, in significant areas. We're not to try to change them. It's their choice if they want to change or not. But there are times when we can, when they're blind to their mistakes and failures, and the areas of blindness are really preventing their progress toward their goals and hindering their relationships. And we can show love by courageously and graciously pointing out the area of failure, but then leaving it there, not trying to nag at it. He may not have the inner resources right now to overcome that. Let's be patient. But we can help him by pointing up some blind spots. We have to confront him when he has offended us. There's some things that we can just, graciously forget and know he didn't really mean them and cover with love. But if it really bothers us in our heart, then the Bible tells us we should go and talk to our brother, our husband, whoever it may be, and seek reconciliation. And this takes courage. Now, none of these qualities exist in a vacuum, and the quality of honesty is very often misunderstood. Honesty does not mean speaking every thought that comes to our mind, but it means not withholding any thought because of fear or because of self-interest. God is honest with us, but he doesn't confront us with everything he knows about us all at once, does he? He deals with us graciously according to our need of the moment. He doesn't dump the truck. Now, we also need love, because love melts defenses and attracts self-disclosure from the other person. I'm not talking just about a romantic feeling. I'm talking about a genuine concern for the well-being of the other person. And love has power to draw out another person and then to do some healing in the life. Sidney Girard, in the book The Transparent Self, made this statement. Man hides much of his real self, his experience, behind an iron curtain. Evidence shows that this iron curtain melts like wax when it is exposed to the warm breath of love. And he goes on to say that research has indicated that a person will reveal himself if he's sure that the other person is a man of goodwill. And if we really convince our husbands and really love our husbands, we'll open the way for them to love, to be open to us. And love has many qualities, and we want to go back maybe to the tape on keeping love in marriage for greater insight into this. But it's kind and gracious and gentle. And in the Proverbs we read, "Straightness of speech increases persuasiveness. And a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger." We need love. We also need discipline that knows when not to talk. Not all communicating is good. The Proverb says that he who talks too much comes to grief. And when I first began to really think about this matter of talking too much, the one that hit me was Proverbs 10:19. "But in a multitude of words, sin is unavoidable." And Ephesians 4:29 gives us an excellent guideline on our speech. It says, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for benefiting others according to the need of the moment, that it may give grace to those who hear. This is a balance for the kind of brutal honesty that says everything it thinks, regardless of timing. And it's obvious that often our verbal activity needs some pruning. We abuse the privilege of speech by endless chatter, and then we lose our audience. And we invite a listening ear if we speak meaningfully. And women often have to refrain from sharing excessive detail with their husbands. If we have to share excessive detail, let's do it to our friends, or let's do it to God. He has all the time in the world. And if we're over-talkative, it's especially important to be alert, to yield the floor quickly to our husband when there's any indication he has something that he might want to say. You know, we need discipline also in keeping secrets. We mentioned this before. But even if we divulge the secrets of another person to our husband, he's going to feel she cannot be trusted to keep secrets. And Paul Tournier makes the statement that the transparent relationship between husband and wife consists in telling our own secrets, not those of others. And perhaps one of the most important areas in which we need discipline is a matter of timing, saying the right thing at the right time. And there are times when it's not wise to bring up unpleasant subjects. Most men don't like it just as they're leaving for work or first thing in the morning. Or during mealtime, it spoils digestion. And let's remember, too, that he often doesn't like complaints those first minutes when he comes home from work and would rather have some loving reassurance and a little quiet. And some things need to be allowed to ripen before we express them. I wonder if we ever let our thoughts ripen or we just pour them out green. And according to Oliver Wendell Holmes, talking is like playing the harp. There's as much in laying the hands on the strings to stop their vibration as in finding them to bring out their music. You know, we need patience, too. We live in an age of instant everything. That's the complex of our age. And if we expect, just because we're enthusiastic about it right now, if we expect instant, full-blown communicating with our husbands to suddenly develop, we'll be disappointed. It doesn't come easily, and there are protective crusts around both of us that have to happen many times, that have to be broken down. The long-range program of learning to open up and melting defenses. And we won't have unbroken, steady progress toward our goal. We don't have that in anything in life. We'll find that we'll have a steep climb where we make lots of progress and then a plateau where you wonder if there's any. Once in a while, a little dip into a valley. Don't be discouraged. Our impatience often causes us to become over-questioners, and we try to pry to know every thought. And that hinders instead of helping. We can ask in a gracious way, honey, is there something wrong? Or, honey, how did that make you feel when I did that? But let's not pry. Let them have time to let their thoughts ripen. And several statements by Charlie Shedd help on this matter. He says, everything does not have to be settled this very day. And he said, it takes a lifetime to close in all the gaps of your knowledge of one another. Love fully what is given today and expectantly wait for tomorrow. But let's not confuse patience with complacency, because we have to have a deep desire to know our husbands if we're going to really progress along this line. There are also some basic skills that we can develop that can help us to be more effective in drawing out our husbands and in improving our closeness of our marital relationship and the preciousness of our love together. Qualities are not all that we need. We can sometimes make mistakes just because we haven't developed skills. And any art demands some skills. And the art of communicating is a complex art. And human personalities are more complex than the most intricate computer. And in order to run a computer, you have to train and learn. You never let an inexperienced person in there to push all those buttons. And there are skills that if you'll take the time to learn them and to give them conscious attention, you can become real artists in communicating. And one skill is learning to listen. We're going to have some notes available that will give you a little bit more help on this. Let me mention just a few things. It's really a rarity to be really heard. But good listening invites a response. It's really easy to speak to you ladies because you sit there as a good attentive audience. So if you're all yawning and half of you are sleeping, I'd probably be stuttering up here. And sometimes our way of listening turns our husband off. And in order to listen well, we have to really become interested in rediscovering our husbands and the good parts of them. Someone has said that it's like going into a treasure chest and examining the gems and then finding more and examining them. And if we explore the true personality of the person we marry, we will find gems. And there will be more wonderful gems underneath. And human personality develops and becomes more beautiful as love inspires and love explores. A wise wife will avoid various responses, and I'll just briefly mention these. The notes that are available, mimeograph that will be available, will cover them more thoroughly. But avoid indifference. You know, going off on your mental errands and you're not really there. Or the husband comes in after work in the kitchen and he excitedly shares you some compliment he got at work or some success, and you say, "Well, isn't that wonderful? Johnny, go turn off the hose and let's get ready for dinner." And this kind of indifference turns off a man and deflates him. And also, you should avoid quick advice and solutions. He needs a sounding board more than he needs us as an advisor. And avoid shock and scolding and lecturing. Avoid interrupting and find out what your husband considers to be an interruption. This is one that I've been working at for several years, and my husband thinks that I've really improved. Every now and then I still find myself so interrupting. I get so impatient to carry on, so involved that I forget him as a person, and I get so involved in the subject that I interrupt. And there, we can interrupt with untimely comments or by supplying words when he pauses. Or filling in and correcting stories as he relates them to other people. Even asking unnecessary questions that will be answered if we just listen a little bit longer. And avoid also preoccupation with what you're going to say next. A good listener doesn't impatiently wait so she can get her word in. She hears what the other person says and responds to it and to the person, not just trying to get her thought across. And when we really listen, we listen to two sources of meaning, the words and the person. And a man likes us to listen to both. To the degree that we can, he likes us to comprehend his meaning. If we don't, we can say, "Well, you should understand some of those complicated things that are hard for me to grasp." That doesn't hurt our relationship a bit. But he likes us to seek to get the meaning, but even more maybe he likes us to listen to him as a person, to notice his admirable qualities as he talks, his enthusiasm, his expression, his idea, how well he's developed it. Various things that we can notice and later on express our admiration. And that really helps him to open up and to really feel that we're with him. You know, maybe you're dying for your husband to listen to you. Maybe you're just dying for some attention. It says in the Bible, "Give and it shall be given unto you. In an increased measure you'll get back what you give." Let's start being good listeners. And let's start revealing our true self. Don't try to get your husband to reveal himself first. Start revealing your true self. The part of you that you haven't been admitting. And you know, it may be that you've been covering covering yourself over with a false, impregnable self-assurance, and that you need to let down and admit your human weakness and fears and frustrations so that he can feel a feeling of tenderness towards you as another needy person. And we have to move, of course, if we want the other person to come. And we can do this by seeking to reveal ourselves. We can also plan questions and remarks that encourage meaningful communication. This is really helpful to me. It's relatively easy for me to talk and express myself, but it still is very helpful to think ahead of some of the things that otherwise I might fail to say, some of the subjects that I might not bring up that could lead to real communicating. And God has given us imaginations to use constructively, and I wonder if we spend as much time thinking about our deep communicating with our husbands as we would if there were an interview coming up with President Nixon or someone. I'm going to be offering, it's not really just yet, but let you sign up for a list of things that can be used as subject matter for intimate communicating. One of the big reasons I'm doing this is because Warren and I want to use it together. We've wanted to do this for some time. Vacation is coming up, and I'm going to get it typed before then, because I think it'd be a wonderful time to just use some of these ideas just to consciously be working toward knowing one another on a deeper level. And the paper's called Personalizing Your Communicating. We also have to learn how to handle hostility. Hostility is a common problem to all human beings, and if you don't think you have any hostility, it varies. Because I'm sure you're human, you all look like it. And we don't have time this morning to really cover this subject, but I have a little paper back there that's available that you can pick up today if this is if you really want to study into it. Don't pick it up just to be polite. It's called God's Patterns on Handling Your Hostilities. It's one we shared last year. We sent it out to the ladies who requested it, and it gives you some real help in helpful patterns. And then later we're going to have two available. One, Disarming Expression of Anger, and another, How to Fight, in quotes, Profitably. And I think that these might be helpful. Also, we do have a cassette from one of the last year's message on handling hostilities that you might find helpful along the subject. And next, learn to admit when you're wrong and ask forgiveness when you offend. Someone said that there are 9 words that are maybe the most important words in the English language for a loving relationship. I think that the first should be I love you, but these 9 come next. I'm sorry, I was wrong. Will you forgive me? Now, there are many specific approaches that we can use if the desire to communicate with our husband is a mutual desire. He also wants to work with us. And we don't have time to go into these. But I'm going to be offering, as soon as we get it typed, a full mini-desk text of this lecture this morning, plus about twice as much more material. I had to cut it in about a third. And this will be available if you want to sign up for it. And I think if you really want to study through it, if you don't have the time, don't sign up. But if you really want to study through it, I think this could be helpful, and it can help you, to find out some of these things that can help you in specific approaches if you're both working on them together. But what we really need, maybe basically, is the power to communicate. Probably all of you ladies have thought, I'm not like that, but I don't think I can change. Or maybe you have some area that just constantly triggers your husband and you struggle to get victory over it, but you just don't seem to be able to do so. Well, it's exciting to know that God knows us thoroughly. He knows every one of our communicating failures. He knows our feelings of hopelessness and all of our defenses. And he knows the areas of self-will and resistance where we don't really want to change. And he wants to help us. He's seeking people to set them free from their guilt and from their powerlessness and their he wants to give them a supernatural experience of love and communication on a high level that will prepare us for communicating on a human level more effectively. And it's exciting to me, maybe even more so, that God not only wants to meet my needs, but he longs for me as a person. He wants fellowship with me. It's amazing and staggering that he should desire me, that he should desire each one of us. He loves us, and love wants a relationship. And if we respond to him in a loving relationship, in a communicating relationship, it brings joy and pleasure to his heart. And he's taken the initiative to provide free access to himself. The basic core message of Christianity is that God so loved the world that he gave his son, who came and died to pay for our guilt, and rose again to provide for us an inner life, his own life within us, so we can overcome and so that he can work in us the qualities that we need. Through Christ, he's provided wonderful free access into his presence where we can communicate all that we want whenever we want. It says in Ephesians that we can come fearlessly right into God's presence, assured of his glad welcome because of Christ. And he's made another provision so that we can continually communicate with him, and that is that he has set patterns on how persons function. He is an infinite, wonderful person, and he's always been reaching out, trying to communicate with man. And one thing that he has done to assure that he will communicate clearly is to have his thoughts, his secrets, written down in a book, in the Bible, so that we can know them clearly. He communicates as all persons do, in verbal, understandable form. And then he seeks to communicate in a more mystical way by his own presence in our lives. And the inner sense and understanding that he gives in a unique way to each one of us. But he really offers us as himself. He offers us a relationship with him that's far more satisfying than the most wonderful marriage. He takes the beautiful relationships of life, such as father, husband, bridegroom, friend, and he says, I would like to be that to you. Let me be that to you, and even more. Let me be that to you in its ideal form. He offers us himself, and it's through Christ that we come to him, so that we can experience him and have him. Jesus said, I am the real and living way. No one comes to the Father except by means of me. And Jesus said, I stand at the door and knock, and if the door is personality, and if any man will hear my voice and open the door, I will come in and will feast with him, and he will feast with me. Jesus offers his own loving presence in our lives. Amy Carmichael says that he is willing to enter the heart as light is willing to flood into a room that's open to its brightness. The difference is that light comes in temporarily. Jesus comes in for an enduring, permanent relationship. But he will not force his way in. He expects us to respond. To respond first by admitting our need. Our basic need is not more counsel and more tactics. We need release from our true moral guilt, and we need release from our powerlessness. We're not capable of developing these qualities we've been talking about. We need a new life within us. We need to expose ourselves to God much as you expose yourself to the measles. And when we catch God, what we catch from him is a contagious love and ability to communicate that helps us to relate to other people. Now, what should our response be if we're not sure that we know him? If he's sort of a blur, sort of a sounds nice, sounds inviting, but I don't know for sure if I know him. Well, the initial step is to invite him in. He says if we ask him, he will come in. And then, after we invite him in and this new life begins, then he wants a loving relationship, just like after the marriage, I will. And that's the beginning of the marriage and of cultivating the relationship. And God longs that we cultivate our relationship. He wants a daily response from us, both as we go about our work in it casually, or as we take time alone in his presence daily to listen to his word and to let him communicate. It's an inexpressible comfort to communicate with God. He knows us totally. He understands us perfectly. We never have to try to get him to understand. We never have to prune our words. We don't have to try to make an impression. We can't fool him. He knows all about us and accepts us the way we are. Why try to? We can be honest and open. And he has all the time in the world. He asks us to communicate with him on the details of our concerns. He promises to intervene and help in our relationships as we ask him. And out of this total relationship with him, we get the resources that we need and the courage and the discipline and the love for our human relationship. You know, it becomes increasingly delightful to come to his word and listen to what he says. It just grows as you begin to understand more fully and to hear him speaking through these wonderful words he's written. Now, for me, one of the greatest aids to on-the-spot communicating with God is passages of scripture that I have memorized in my heart, and they're in my heart. And I was driving along the other day, and I was praising God for various things, and verse after verse of scripture came back to mind that I used in my praise, and it was a delightful experience. It repeatedly happens with his words in our hearts. And I thought at the time, I thought how impoverished I would be if some years ago someone had not helped me to learn how to memorize scripture. I haven't been as faithful at it as some people I know, but I have in my heart a rich treasury that makes my communicating with God and my whole life richer. Jeremiah 15:16 says, "Thy words were found, and I did eat them, and thy word was to me the joy and rejoicing of my heart. For I am called by your name, O Lord God of hosts." So then we can go on to enjoy these benefits. If we first respond to him, receiving him, and then go on to cultivate the relationship. And God's love brings us into a reality far beyond what we humans call normal. And instead of seeing ourselves in the distorted mirror, we see our people's responses alone. We begin to see ourselves in the undistorted mirror of God's love, that in which we see ourselves as loved and accepted, though imperfect. And that through his life in us, we get a new power to overcome our defensive reactions and to extend to others the same kind of unconditional love that God floods our hearts with. You know, Christ made the deaf hear, and he made the dumb speak. And if we love him, he can touch our hearts, our lives, our marriages. He can begin to overcome our communicating problems. And he can enable us to go on to greater brilliance in our marriages. And he will do this if we let him. You for the beautiful plan that you've made for life on human level, the idea you have of true unity and oneness and delight in the marriage relationship, plus all the other delightful relationships of life. And thank you even more for the fact that you long for us and for an intimate relationship with us, and that you sent Jesus to die for us that this might be possible. We pray for each of us here in our individual needs, whether it be the initial invitation of you into our hearts, or whether it be a new step forward in our communicating and trusting you, whether it be also some particular steps you want us to take to become more the loving companion our husbands need. We have our eyes upon you to work in us and to guide us, and to work in our marriages to make them all that you have in mind for them to be. And we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.